We're doing a fill-up on the parsha. It says, Yitzchak loved Esav, kitzayit bifiv. Esav's hunting was in Yitzchak's mouth. Pshat is that Yitzchak loved Esav because he would feed him. Unkelo says, mitzidei avachil. He used to eat from Esav's hunting. And that teaches us how great a mitzvah is. That even if a mitzvah is tainted, Esav is inappropriate in many things that he does. But there's still value to what Esav does right. He feeds his father. He does take care of his father. And Yitzchak, in his greatness, has an appreciation for a mitzvah. And so that when Yitzchak sees what's right in Esav, he loves him. He sees Esav is fulfilling his mitzvah so well, his kibud av v'aim. And what Yitzchak senses is that even though there's so much wickedness to Esav, all the clouds cannot put out the shine of a mitzvah. And so Yitzchak sees Esav's mitzvah. He sees the good in Esav. And the fundamental concept here is that Esav, when he did kibud av v'aim, would really do the mitzvah with its depth of holiness. Because deep down in Esav, there is Torah Shebal Peh. This is a recurring theme in Rav Charlap, that as bad as Esav is, within Esav there's Rabbi Akiva. Within Esav there is Rabbi Meir. Within Esav there are the sparks of what would still be the giants of Torah. The giants, the number one giants. Rabbi Akiva. Moshe Rabbeinu says, why give Torah through me? Rabbi Akiva's greater. Rabbi Meir, all of our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir, who could look at his Rabbi Acher and say, even though he's turned on the mitzvah and he's giving over Jews to be executed by the Romans, but there's good, I can take it out of him. Rabbi Meir, who is a descendant of Esav. So in those sparks of holiness that were also a part of Esav, that was how Esav could fulfill the mitzvah of kibud av v'aim in its wholeness. So that when he brings food to his father senses the holiness of the mitzvah of kibud av v'aim. Vayehav Yitzchak et Esav kitzayit b'fiv. It's not because materialistic he enjoyed the venison he was bringing him. It's because he sensed the purity, the element of holiness and the kibud av that Esav was able to attend. That's point one. Yes?
But during the bracha, when Esav comes in, Gehenna's son, seems like he had also a bad side that he carried around.
Right. We said that Yitzchak saw the light as putting out all the darkness, as overcoming the darkness that was Esav.
What changed when Esav came in that it was...
That we did last night. See the Rav Charlap class last night about how by deceiving Yitzchak, Rivka was trying to bring him down a notch so that he would be open to seeing the Gehenim that was Esav. Yitzchak was always on a level where he wouldn't see it. And Rivka said, if I deceive him, then I will force him down. When Yitzchak will suddenly say, hey, I was tricked, so then he will suddenly have to deal with the idea there is trickery in the world. Yitzchak on his level was not dealing with the idea there are tricksters out there. It wasn't a part of his. It wasn't a part of his realm of vision.
Even after dealing with all of the Plishtim and
his servants dealt with Plishtim, and he dealt in a very pure way. There's a fight. He left. He moved on. Furthermore, says Rav Chalap, we have to know that what we see stems from what we sense, and when you can't sense something, you don't see it. This is a short version of what we saw last night. And the only reason why a person can see evil is because he himself has that evil component. When a person, I remember talking to my kids once and telling them about someone who could be dishonest. And they look at me and say, but that's dishonest. And they're not understanding, like, wait, a person could be dishonest? When a person feels like that's just not right. So when a person's still pure, they, you don't understand the concept exists. And if a person doesn't have within him the evil, so then he doesn't have the capacity to see it either. We see what exists within us. We cannot see what we have no concept that it exists. It's like a crass example of that. when the television first came out, so there was someone in Forest Hills who bought a television. And his relatives heard he bought a television. So they were all waiting for an invitation to see what a television is. So he brought them to his house. He brought a group of people. And he sat them down in front of a toaster. And he put in two slices of bread and he said, "Watch." So they're sitting there looking at their reflection in the toaster. And they think that's a television. They never saw a toaster before either. And they're sitting there watching, and they're watching, and they're watching, and after about 2 minutes, it's heating up, and then the toaster pops, and toast comes out, and they all jump. And he just stood there watching and laughing at them, because they didn't know what a television was. So here, they got a surprise, they got a thrill. So they said, "That's it?" So he goes, "That's it, that's a television." They say, "Okay, that wasn't so impressive." They get up to leave. Right? Then he takes them into his living room and shows them what a television is. When you don't know what something is, you don't see what you don't have within you. It's very hard for you to see that it exists externally. You're not prepared to even see it. So you see, you don't know what you're seeing. There are many examples for that. Sometimes children will see things you wish they didn't see. But if they don't understand what they're seeing, so then nothing necessarily happened. I was once walking with my kids, and there were two men hugging and kissing and walking. And I wasn't sure what to tell my kids. But my kids didn't understand what they were seeing. So we just moved on. And they were like, "That's weird." And on to the next thing. And then my kid asks me, "Was that a father and son who haven't seen one another for a very long time?" I say, "It must be."
Okay. I do an idol worship in the classic sense.
Right? That's a great example, right? We don't understand who's running for idol worship. It doesn't exist within us. We don't have any desire to bow to a Buddha. That's a great example, yeah. So Yitzchak was on an altar. Yitzchak was at a place where he reached holiness like Adam Arishon before the sin. And what?
He looked like Adam Arishon, right?
I don't know. So Yitzchak reached a point where there wasn't anything evil about him. And this mixture of the way we live life, where evil and kindness and good and bad, there's confusion in the world, that's all a result of what happened with Adam Arishon eating the forbidden fruit. But Yitzchak, who doesn't go to Chutz La'aretz, and Eretz Yisrael is only good. The only reason why a person can connect to evil is because he knows he has the option of going to Chutz La'aretz. When a person is fully connected to Eretz Yisrael and there is no option of Chutz La'aretz, so then he can't connect to evil. Eretz Yisrael is Tova Haaretz Meod Meod. It's a good. And so Yitzchak, who can't leave Eretz Yisrael, Yitzchak, who is only about good, so then Yitzchak doesn't see evil. And so he doesn't have it within him, he doesn't see it outside of him. And that's why when he sees Esav, he only sees the good in Esav. He sees the mitzvah that's Esav. Are there other things about Esav? He's blind to that. And that's what Rivka tells Yitzchak. Katzti bechayai, I hate my life if Yaakov takes one of these Hittite women. What do I need life for? Where was Yitzchak? Wait a second. Why didn't Yitzchak say that? Because in Yitzchak's purity, he didn't see all of that. And that's to teach us the greatness of Yitzchak. That a person can attain greatness to the point where what's evil in the world isn't a part of him. He doesn't see it, he doesn't look at it, he's not interested in it, he doesn't connect to it, to the point where he has a hard time recognizing it exists. That's because he is so pure. The flip side of this we see in Paro. Paro is so arrogant and distrustful that he can't fathom the concept of a truthful God. They come to him and they say, "Hashem sent us." And Paro says, "I don't know Hashem." It says, "Lo ta'aminu ki lo te'ameinu." You can't trust others if you're not a trusted person. And Paro was all about lies. So when Hashem is talking to him, he can't believe Hashem because he's not a trustworthy person himself. The less trustworthy a person is, the more they tend to suspect other people. Because that's who they are, so that's what they see in others.